Hoffman, Thompson.
The Minnesota Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. The date is April 15th, currently we're waiting for a quorum, but we're going to continue. We're going to start with Senator Miller's bill. Hopefully, there'll be just one more senator that can give us quorum, or maybe two more senators. But what we should do is have a thoughtful discussion about Senator Miller's bill, and then hopefully by the time we get ready for decision, we'll be ready to vote. Senator Miller, welcome to the committee. Now, Senator Miller, is this the first committee you've had, first time you've had before the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
Okay.
All right. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you,
Not
Mr.
to
Chair.
Worry, Senator Miller. I'll protect you.
Thank you, Senator.
It'll be painless.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for bringing us in on a Friday, because this is great.
Well, he started
but as you told me, if you have to be here, we have to be here. So I appreciate that.
Well, Senator Miller, I know you're new, but for those of us who have been around, actually the hours of the Senate usually have a five-day work week, and, eternal vigilance is the price of freedom.
Mr. Chair, and I'm well aware that I've been putting in 12-hour days going through my email and my mail, so I'm well aware of that, so thank you.
And we get paid to do this, too.
Isn't it fun? Mr. Chair and members, first of all, thank you again for having me here today. Senate File 799 limits the liability exposure for non-public colleges and universities when data they are required to share with the Office of Higher Education is breached, improperly disclosed, or misused by the Office of Higher Education or by individuals or entities provided access to the data by the Office of Higher Education. And we do have a author's amendment that I believe you have in your folder, and I don't know if we can, or they're going to pass it out. I don't know if we can we move that, or do we have to wait till we...
Senator Miller, you cannot make an author's amendment at this time because this is not the committee of origin.
Okay.
We would consider it as an amendment by one of our members.
Sure.
And I know
so
we
moved.
Have a member to do that.
So moved.
But we cannot move that until we have quorum.
Okay.
So, Senator Miller, why don't, for the purposes of discussion, center your comments regarding the A1 amendment,
sure.
And we'll continue that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to pass it off to the testifiers to explain the amendment a little bit more in detail. And we have been working on this with all the folks involved, and Mr. McMahon can explain that. So we've been trying to work together and keep everyone's best interest in mind as we've moved forward from the Higher Education Committee.
Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee, Senator Miller. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Director of Government and Community Affairs of the Minnesota Private College Council. We represent the 17 nonprofit liberal arts colleges throughout the state, schools like St. Mary's down in Senator Miller's district, Augsburg College, Concordia University, and those types of schools throughout the state. On an annual basis, we enroll about 45,000 undergraduate students, about 15,000 graduate students. Pertaining to the amendment before you right now, under current Minnesota law, all colleges and universities in the state are required to share enrollment and financial aid data for the students enrolled at our institutions with the Office of Higher Education. In the mid-1990s, institutions entered into data-sharing agreements with the office, which identified what data is to be shared, describes the scope of the data, or the use of the data, and limits the data, or the use of the data, solely to the Office of Higher Education. We are currently still operating under those data-sharing agreements that were enacted, I think, around 1996 or so. In the past few sessions, changes have been made to Minnesota's data practices statutes that allows for the sharing of student data between the Office of Higher Education and the Minnesota Department of Education for the purposes of evaluation, research, and policy analysis regarding education performance. With a permission in the data practices statute, the state is moving forward in creating what's called the State Longitudinal Education Data System that will link K-12 data with higher education data and allow for the tracking of students as they move through K-12 into and through higher education. to permit the Office of Higher Education to put the higher education data into this longitudinal data system, the office is asking each college in the state to enter into a new data sharing agreement that would permit the Office of Higher Education to link the higher education data with the MDE data, which essentially grants MDE access to the data. Additionally, the database would be managed by the Office of Enterprise Technology. The colleges are concerned about the increased risk that we are being asked to shoulder under this new data sharing agreement request. These colleges are now being asked to make their data available not only to the Office of Higher Education, a state agency that the colleges have a close relationship, working relationship with, but also two additional state agencies for which our colleges have no direct connection to, oversight, or relationship with. As the number of agencies and individuals who have access to the potential or potential access to the data increases under this longitudinal data system, so does the liability risk being shouldered by our colleges that data could ultimately be misused or improperly disclosed. Under this bill, private colleges or universities who share data with the Office of Higher Education would not be liable for the damages incurred by the individual through the misuse, unlawful access to the data, or improper disclosure that results from the actions of the Office of Higher Education or individuals or other agencies that they grant access to. Likewise, under this bill, private colleges or universities would still be liable for the damages incurred by the individual through the misuse, unlawful access to the data, or improper disclosure that results from the actions from our employees of our colleges or our universities. And at this point, I would like to turn things over to Phyllis Karazov, our legal counsel, to describe a bit of the legal environment in which this bill is operating under.
Ms. Karazov, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Phyllis Karazov from the law firm of Moore, Costello & Hart, and it's my privilege to speak with you this morning. Despite the best intentions of those that are in possession of confidential records, the fact is that there are breaches that occur every day. Every day we read in the newspaper about some organization or some state agency that has either lost or has improperly disclosed confidential data that has been given to them. In recent years, reports have been that over 285 million records have been compromised through security breaches. There is a website that is sponsored by the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse that gives a chronology of data breaches. And just in 2011, there have been numerous breaches. For example, in March, the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development lost a hard drive with all kinds of confidential student information on it. There are a number of theories of liability under which a prospective a student could sue an institution of higher education if there is a security breach. These could include tortious invasion of privacy, negligence, breach of contract, fraudulent misrepresentation, and negligent misrepresentation. A student whose information has been disclosed by a state agency would likely sue both the state of Minnesota and the institution that he or she attended for giving that information to the state. The proposed statute is important. The state of Minnesota's liability is limited by the Tort Claims Act as well as sovereign immunity. However, those limitations do not apply to a claim against a private institution, and therefore the institution could be considered a deep pocket for and a much more attractive defendant for a student who wants to make a claim. I know that there has been some thought that it would be a simple thing for an institution of higher education to simply get a dismissal from a court in the event that they are sued. But it's really not that easy, and it's still going to cost, they're still going to have to expend funds, they have to retain an attorney, they have to file a motion to dismiss, they have to argue that it's not their fault, that it's the state's fault, and there's no guarantee that such a motion would even be granted by a judge. And the judge could insist that discovery continue on while considering that motion. So such a claim also is going to put an institution in an adversarial position with the state, which is not what they want to do because the colleges want to cooperate with the state in accomplishing the objectives that are there as far as evaluating the success of the public education system. So there is also going to be reputational harm to an institution if they are named in a lawsuit concerning a breach of confidential information, and such a lawsuit could result in student and parent distrust of the institution and the institution's protocols for protecting confidential information. In addition to potential civil liability, there's also a potential of criminal liability under the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act. So for those reasons, this statute is going to be giving a lot of protection to institutions of high education, which are providing this information to the state. There are several other states that have similar provisions. Tennessee and Louisiana have them. And, of course, the state of Minnesota has a number of statutory grants of immunity. There are over 150 separate statutory provisions of state law that provide some manner of immunity. So for those reasons, we believe that this statute will give really important protection to the state, to the institutions of higher education for providing this information. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifiers? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe somebody can explain to me why the private institutions, why, when, and how it came about the private institutions have to provide this data to the Office of Higher Education. I think you made a comment that it was quite cumbersome as well. Can you give me a little background on that?
Mr. McMahon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we can provide a little bit of context. If there are further questions, the Office of Higher Education is present as well. They might be able to answer your question more thoroughly. A number of years back, the higher education statutes were altered to require the colleges to provide enrollment and financial aid data. And for the most part, enrollment data is things like, what's your major, what year of studies are you degree seeking, and then it gets into some other things about, do you have a disability and those kind of things, just so that they can do evaluation for the programs. It was intended primarily so that the Office of Higher Education could better evaluate the programs that they administer, which are primarily financial aid programs, things like the Minnesota State Grant Program, which provides higher education funding for students attending public and private institutions based off of their need, things like the Child Care Grant, the Chief Scholarship, and those types of programs. Under that type of situation, we were happy to provide the type of data that that they were requiring in order to provide that evaluation so that we can make sure that the state programs were providing the service that they were intended to do. Does that adequately answer your
follow-up? Yes, thank you. So that's all private data? It's not public data, some of that stuff, as far as enrollment information?
Mr. Chair, Senator, from the data that we share under state statute, it is deemed to be private information. The schools have the ability under FERPA, which is the federal regulations, to choose whether or not they will disclose that type of information. And in situations, there are opportunities where we can disclose enrollment data and some directory information. But under state statute, the Office of Higher Education defers to the institution standards as to how data is treated. So if one school says we're not going to release any of our data or make any of our data technically public, the Office of Higher Education respects that institution's determination on their disclosure regulations.
Thanks.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm going to have Kathy Pontius, our counsel, explain the references here that we're talking about, 136A.05. That's regarding data and how it's classified, and that'll give you a better perspective of what the bill is attempting to do. And the way I understand it, the school institutions at this level are doing everything they can to keep the data private as required by law. But if it's required that they pass it to the Office of Higher Education, they don't want to be liable for someone else's actions. Ms. Pontius?
Mr. Chairman, members, working from the A1 amendment, where you see the cross-references to the statutes, the first one is 136A.05, and this is a provision under which, first of all public higher education institutions have to cooperate with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education and provide data for purposes of research projects and studies. Private institutions are requested to cooperate. And the other two provisions, 136A.121 and 136A.1701, there's kind of parallel language in two statutes. One deals with student grants, and the other one is financial aid. And under both of those statutes, an eligible institution is required to provide certain data, which at a minimum would include what's called aggregate and distributional financial or other data that they determine relevant to carrying out their responsibilities. So my understanding is that this is not student-specific data that's being shared. I defer to the witnesses on that.
All right. Mr. McMahon?
Mr. Chair, and we'd be happy to invite the Office of Higher Education up to better explain those references. I don't have the statutes in front of me. There's two subdivisions under there. The second one describes the aggregate nature of the data pertaining to additional requests that may come from the administrator of the Office of Higher Education. The first subdivision, it's not spelled out in statute very concretely, but the determination by the Office of Higher Education is that what's being requested is student-specific enrollment and financial aid data. So what we're asked to provide under that requirement by the office is for our students, and I can rattle through a list of the type of things that are being asked for. The institution in which they attend, their tuition category, this pertains to the public situation, resident, non-resident reciprocity, secondary school completion status, Minnesota high school and year of graduation, transfer institution, those types of data points. Additionally, in order to allow the Office of Higher Education to do matching of students from year to year so that, the data records from two academic years ago, they're able to link to academic records from a year ago, they're also asked to provide birth date and Social Security numbers so that the office can match up and know that Joe Smith from 2 years ago attending Augsburg College is Joe Smith from last year attending Augsburg College. And frankly, it's the inclusion of name, birth date, and Social Security number within those data records that make us the most nervous as far as the potential damage that could happen to an individual based off of improper disclosure of the information.
All right. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe legal counsel Karasov?
Yes, Karasov.
Could you give me a practical example of, for instance, how private college would come into a litigation? Can you just give me just a basic example of that?
Ms. Karasov.
With this information.
Mr. Senator, Mr. Chair, and committee members, if a student's Social Security number, place of residence, birth date, and gender were improperly disclosed so that someone could steal identity, and as a result, the student has all kinds of complications because now other, credit cards have been opened and there's been all kinds of problems because their identity has been stolen, they might sue both the state and the institution for having improperly disclosed that information.
I'll let the record show there is a quorum. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe we have the Office of Higher Ed here, too, if they might want to say a few words about this. I think it'd be fair to have them on the record as well, if they'd like to do that.
Before we do that, Senator Newman moves the A1 amendment. There's been plenty of discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Sarah Miller, did you want anyone else to give testimony?
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Miller.
I just want to make sure that that the office is on record either supportive or not supportive or neutral on this issue. That's more than anything, that's why I wanted to come
out. Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, Mark Mishkans with the Office of Higher Education.
I'm Meredith Fergus with the Office of Higher Education. I help coordinate the longitudinal data system project.
And Mr. Chair, maybe I can just give a little history on the data sharing and the agreements, and then Meredith can speak to some of the details, the technical details.
Please go ahead.
To Senator Miller's point, the office is supportive of this. It does help and aids in this longitudinal data system development. For many years, the office had data sharing agreements with the different institutions. It was not mandatory until a few years ago that, and this was individual data on the part of students. It was, as Mr. McMahon talked about, the list of data items. About 4 or 5 years ago, I think it was 06 actually, session, there's a number of schools that were just not completing the data requests. And from our perspective, we wanted to give complete data to the legislature for research purposes and other kinds of simply summary data. So these are simply eligibility requirements. If you want to be eligible for the state grant program, you have to supply the data. If you want to be eligible for the self-loan program, you have to provide the data. If institutions choose not to be participate in either of those two programs, they don't have to, and then they would not supply the data. And that is, I think, in the case of actually Mayo Medical School, maybe one case of that, where they do not supply data to the state, but they don't participate in the programs either. So.
But we also have a number of...
Could you identify yourself for the record?
Certainly. Meredith Fergus with the Office of Higher Education. And we do have a number of colleges who do voluntarily submit the data. Walden University is one. They are not necessarily participating in the state grant program given their graduate students, but they do supply data to the Office of Higher Education.
All right. Thank you. Further discussion? Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I have Mr. McMahon and Ms. Karasov come back,
it's
please?
It's a hard name.
It is, and I apologize.
Think Karamazov without the M.
My comments and questions would be directed to either of you that feel comfortable in asking the answering my questions. But when I look at the A1 amendment and please understand that I don't know lots and lots about data privacy and that type of thing, and I'm not familiar with this bill. I haven't seen it before just a few minutes ago. But what the A1 amendment, the first impression that I am left with is that the private colleges are looking for a blanket immunity similar to what the state may have, irrespective of the degree of misconduct on the part of the folks who work for the private colleges, such as gross negligence, intentional misconduct. And Senator Ingebretson's question, what kind of an example are we talking about, and identity theft comes up. So my first question is the private colleges or are the private colleges looking for blanket immunity, for instance, if an employee intentionally took private data from a student and used it in some nefarious way involving identity theft?
Mr. Chair, McMahon. Senator Newman, the statute, as you see in the amendment, would not come into play until we give the data to the Office of Higher Education. We no longer have control of the data, and it's an action of an employee or somebody who the Office of Higher Education grants access to it. So what we're asking for is the limited liability when it's the action of somebody other than those associated with our institutions. if it's a situation in which our institutions, you know, whether it's a financial aid office, admissions office, whatever the case may be, if we improperly disclose the information, we would still be liable for any sort of damages that, that pertain to that situation.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. McMahon, and again, I'm not an expert in data privacy, but that doesn't appear to be what the bill says. It doesn't talk about limited liability. It says not liable. And that just, you know, I'm very concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, in particular, were the comments about the need to go to court if something happens. And I was sort of left with the impression that the private colleges wouldn't want to go to court because it's, in effect, an inconvenience and is going to cost them some money to go in and have a judge review these issues. But at the same time, what you're really doing is cutting off the right of the student to go to court. And, you know, you're putting out a barrier there that will prevent the student from enforcing whatever rights that they may have. And given the fact that this amendment seems to be such a wide, you're casting such a wide net that I'm just very concerned about cutting off the rights of a student may have. That's, and again, it's the first time I've seen this, but those are my concerns and those are my comments.
Senator Newman, could I direct you to line 8 on the amendment? There is a qualifier, and I don't know if your comments included that, the word if the breach results from actions or omissions of the Office of Higher Education. Does that help define your concern?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is no, it doesn't, because the way I'm looking at it, again, it's a blanket immunity type of a statute, simply saying they're not liable, and you know, irrespective of the degree of misconduct or wrongdoing. So perhaps I'm just confused but I'm just not comfortable with granting private institutions that kind of blanket immunity.
Senator Newman, I read the amendment differently. The way I read it is that the provision, the Institute of Higher Education, would not be liable only in a narrow window if the breach resulted from an action of a different entity, the Office of Higher Education. That's how I read it. Perhaps counsel could give establish kind of the parameters that this amendment may have. And am I wrong in that conclusion, or could you give us a little more perspective on this?
Mr. Chairman, members, yeah, my understanding is with the use of the word if on 1.8 that it is limited. The attempt here is basically to avoid some kind of vicarious liability.
And in the event, counsel, if the institution of higher education were to create their own breach of confidentiality, disclosure, use, retention, or destruction of a student record on their own, under their own recognizance, this would not give them a very. This would not give an aggrieved person or harmed individual any barrier to pursue action against the institution of higher education.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's my reading of the language. It would only protect them if the breach actually resulted from conduct of the Office of Higher Education or persons who receive the data from the Office of Higher Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hall, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going back to That's still Senator Newman's questions are still resonating within me. The example again, and some of the question was, how do you lose a hard drive for one? Maybe we'll go back to that. That's my first one.
Mr. Chair, what? Senator, that's a question that that countless people want to know. You know, looking back at just a Minnesota example, back in December, the Minnesota Department of Education improperly disclosed a transcript of 20 students from a charter school located, I believe, here in St. Paul. How these things happen is a very valid question, and that's where our concern stems from. We're being asked to provide what could be considered sensitive information about our students with the state agency. We work closely with the Office of Higher Education. We've worked with them for years on their security parameters as to how they deal with data. We don't have control over the agency. We don't have direct oversight over the agency, but we do have a working relationship with them. Under this new scenario, and frankly, at this point, our schools are, they're not 100% comfortable with the risk level that they're being asked to shoulder by being required to share the data with the Office of Higher Education, but there is a level of comfort. Moving forward, this data is going to be accessible by the Department of Education, the Office of Enterprise Technology, and there's discussions going on right now about making it available in the future with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. These are agencies that our schools have no connection with, no ability to influence the security parameters that they use on their data and access and employee training and those types of things. Our schools have no direct connection to working with those agencies like they would with Office of Higher Education. So the question of how does a hard drive disappear comes to the root cause of our concern and why we're here today asking for this liability protection. Again, we have no problem if our schools, our employees, or people connected with our institutions improperly disclose that information. In fact, we would go so far as to say that we should be liable for our action in this situation. We don't have control over what staff at the Office of Higher Education do with data. We don't have control with employees from the Department of Education as to how they work with data, with the Office of Enterprise Technology, with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. If we had control over how those employees acted, what security parameters they do take, we probably wouldn't be here today asking for this protection. But given the fact that we do have a very high level of risk associated with the type of data that we're being required to provide, we think that there's, you know, probably a reasonable expectation that since we're not the ones who would be causing the breach of the data, that we shouldn't be the ones who are held liable for the actions of others that we don't have control over.
Okay. Great. Any further discussion? Senator Newman, would you like to make the motion or would you not?
I have one more question.
Sure, Senator Newman.
The explanation by Mr. McMahon is just confusing me because he, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I read the statute where it's talking about protection for the Institute or the Office of Higher Education, and you are talking about protecting private colleges. Are you not? Or am I misunderstanding?
Mr. McMahon.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we are asking for protection for the private colleges. We're asking for protection of the institutions who are being asked to provide or who are being required to provide the data to the Office of Higher Education. The protection will not come into play if our employees behave improperly or make a mistake that allows this data to be misused, breached, or improperly disclosed. What the liability would cover is once we provide that data to the Office of Higher Education, we no longer have control of that data, and we're no longer the ones accessing that data. If the breach of the data or misuse of the data happens once we no longer have control of it, and it's done by an employee of the Office of Higher Education or an entity that they grant access to the data, which moving forward under this longitudinal data system would include the Department of Education and the Office of Enterprise Technology, That's where the liability protection comes in.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Where in this A1 amendment are the protections that you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think the best answer to that one, and I don't know if it's quite going to answer the question you're hoping for, so let me know if it doesn't, is on line 1.8 through 1.11. If the breach of disclosure, use, retention, or destruction results from the actions or omissions of, and 1 and 2 in lines 1.10 and 1.11, narrowly define who those actions occur from. It's the Office of Higher Education or persons provided access to the data or records by the Office of Higher Education. So if the data breach occurs within that realm, within the Office of Higher Education or those who they grant access to, that's where the liability protection would come into play. If the breach happens anywhere outside of that realm, which would include any breach that occurs because of the actions of our institutions, then we would still be liable for any damages that an individual incurs as a result of that breach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Is there a member who would wish to make a motion?
I will move the... Mr. Chairman, where's this bill going to go?
This is going to go to the floor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate File 799 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Miller. Thank you.
We're going to change the schedule or agenda a little bit. Senator Daley will be next, followed by the civil immunity extension of municipalities for public safety equipment. Senate File 735. Senator Daley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Is this your first time before the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
It is. Okay.
All right. So be gentle.
Okay.
Gentle.
Yeah, welcome to the committee.
It's great to be here. Mr. Chair, I do have an author's amendment. If members could... get a copy of that.
This original committee. We're waiting for it to be passed out, Senator Daley.
Yes.
I guess it is in your. It's in your packets. No, I guess not. Senator Daley's amendment, the A1, is an author's amendment. And in order to get the bill in the form that the author wishes, we'll move it now. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Senator Daley. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to bring this bill forward because I feel very strongly about the need to get people to be more physically active. We do have an obesity and overweight challenge in our society, and the NFL has even recognized it. If you watch pro football on Sunday afternoons, you see the Play 60 logo on some of the football fields. The problems and the trends are stark. In 1995, approximately 44% of Minnesotans were considered overweight or obese. And now, recently, they did an update to that study, and approximately 63% of Minnesotans are overweight or obese. And the obesity epidemic has significant costs in terms of health care and other indirect costs, even affecting our national security. Last April, there was a study that came out, and it showed that in 1995, 12% of military recruits were considered obese or overweight, were not able to qualify to be accepted into the military, and last year, 21%. So it had grown from 12% to 21% of our youth were not able to get into the military. So it is a national security issue. There is no silver bullet here to solve this. With the trends that we see, it'll take years of cumulative small steps. This bill is a proposal to move us in that direction. The American Heart Association and Minnesotans for Healthy Kids Coalition approached me with this idea, and I agreed to take it on because anything we can do to remove the barriers to allow kids and communities to be physically active is an important step for us to take. This bill removes a barrier for schools to open their doors or their facilities to allow more recreational activities. It does this by clarifying the law in the area of school liability for recreational use. I want to stress for the record that my intent here is to clarify the law. The intent is not to broaden or constrict the law, but rather to ensure what can be a murky area of the law is more clear for the groups and the schools that are trying to cooperate under the law. Some legal research done on the subdivision in the law has turned up over 40 cases that made it to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court. And to me, that seems like a lot of cases, not even considering that the cases that were never appealed. So clarity in the law is what is needed. I am not an attorney, so I'll leave the details about the bill and how it operates to clarify the law to the attorneys and the staff in the room. I do want to make several highlights here from several communities where they've applauded our efforts to clarify the law. Richfield schools have weighed in, and we have a letter of support. Hopefully that's in your packet. If not, we can pass that around. From Michael Schwartz, the district's business manager, he discusses how the Richfield schools are providing a community resource to promote physical activity and would welcome greater clarity in the law. Down in Faribault County, a consultant working on promoting physical activity in the community stated, and I quote, "Our school is the only venue in town for winter walking and is very minimally available and used. I think policy and liability information would be welcomed," end quote. And I also have a letter from Professor David Prince, hopefully that's in your packet as well, who teaches tort law at William Mitchell. He applauds our efforts to try to reduce obesity and then goes on to say, quote, "Any clarification that provides better guidance to schools, community members, and district courts will help to promote the use of schools as community resources for recreation and physical activity," end quote. Again, just to briefly summarize, this is not a silver bullet. Passing this law won't mean tomorrow our obesity epidemic is completely solved. But it is a step in the right direction. We can all agree that we need to do what we can, even if they are small steps, to tackle this obesity and overweight problem. That's all I have at this point. Mr. Chair, I'd like to hand it over to some other supporters who would like to testify.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Rachel Callanan. I'm Regional Vice President of Advocacy for the American Heart Association. And I'm here today to speak in support of Senator Daley's bill, Senate File 1068. We need to do everything we can to ensure that people get the opportunity to be physically active in their communities. And this bill, we believe, helps fulfill that goal. Research has shown that people who have parks and recreational facilities nearby exercise 38% more than those who do not have easy access. So access to a place to exercise is a key part of the puzzle to get people active. Many communities are looking to schools to provide the opportunities for physical activity. However, some schools have identified the threat of liability for injury or property damage as a reason they do not open their doors to community members. Current state law relies on a state statute that provides a limitation on liability to municipalities and school districts for parks and recreation areas. It's Minnesota Statute Section 466.03, Subdivision 6E. The statute requires interpretation by the courts because the language does not clearly provide protection for schools and school districts from liability for the range of recreational activities that communities would like to encourage. To better understand the law, I did create a flow chart for those of us who are not really familiar and immersed in this area of the law, and to also give you an idea of how complex this area of the law is. And community groups are out there, you know, wanting to start a walking program on their school property, wanting to establish a community garden on the school property, and they have to try to interpret all of this and understand all of this so that they can understand what the liability for schools are. So to just quickly run through the chart, at the top of the chart you'll see there is overall general liability for municipalities for their torts. Under the definition section, municipality clearly defines school districts as a municipality for this section of the law. Again, under 466.02, there's general tort liability. And then under this chapter, there's a section that specifically addresses a laundry list of exceptions to that general tort liability that municipalities have. And, you know, there are a number of different areas there. Specific to our purposes today is subdivision 6E that addresses parks and recreation areas. So you'll see, and I've already talked about kind of how that language operates. It's not a blanket immunity. You'll see that final sentence in that box under subdivision 6E. Nothing in the subdivision limits the liability of a municipality for conduct that would entitle a trespasser to damage against a private person. So there's a trespasser standard of liability that applies. So it's not a blanket immunity. And so all of this leads to numerous cases that have churned through the system that Senator Daley mentioned already, many unpublished and published decisions, some directly addressing this issue, many not directly addressing this issue. But to summarize it, do we really want community groups to have to understand all these different areas of the statute and then also try to understand over 40 different court decisions at the appellate level to try to understand this area of law? That's really what led and drove us to decide to bring this bill forward and to promote this new subdivision that very specifically addresses school districts and their liability under recreational use. Again, I'll repeat, we are not attempting to greatly broaden or to greatly constrict this area of law. Our goal is clarity so that community groups can work with their school districts to achieve this very important public policy purpose that I hope we all can agree is important, to use our schools as a community resource for these kinds of activities. And so with that, I wanted to just highlight a few areas that we have gotten some pushback. Some concerns have been expressed to us. I want to highlight those for you today because you may have heard already about some of these concerns, or you may hear from people testifying today about these concerns. One objection that we have heard is that schools already have immunity. We don't need to provide this section of law and provide additional immunity. Again, we are not seeking to provide additional immunity from liability. We are seeking to clarify the law. I think the complexity of the law, the numerous case decisions, point to a need for some clarity in this area of the law. Some have said that, and I also just want to mention, we did hear from a number of communities that this is a concern. We're not just bringing this out of the blue. We do know that communities are concerned. They are trying to work and operate within this area of the law, and they are finding challenges in doing that. And so we have heard from communities, and so we're trying to address those issues. We've also heard that in some respects, some people believe that this law, proposed subdivision, is not clear enough. It's lacking definitions. We have done the best we can to try to keep it as close to reflecting the current status of the law and to provide clarity. If we are falling short on that, we have offered to the stakeholders to work very closely with them to identify any fixes that may be needed in this area, and we are very open to doing that and hope to meet with them if there are remaining concerns after our amendment. And then finally, I just want to mention a couple of things. This law does not require school districts to do anything. School districts still have complete discretion about how, under what terms, and when they want to open up their school recreational facilities to outside groups or community members. So this is not a mandate to the schools to force them to do anything. It just simply is an attempt to provide clarity in the law. And with that, I will be happy to stand for questions. I know there's one more testifier in support.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan. Next testifier, could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Matt Schaefer. I'm with the American Cancer Society, and we'd like to speak in favor of Senate File 1068 and thank Senator Daley and the American Heart Association for their leadership in bringing this forward. Obesity is the second leading cause of cancer after tobacco, and that's why we support any policy that seeks to improve nutrition and increase physical activity by removing barriers to healthy lifestyles. Nearly two out of every three Minnesotans is currently overweight or obese, while 25% of Minnesota's children between ages 10 and 17 are obese. That's a dramatic increase from just 10 years ago, and if this trend continues, Minnesota could be spending more than $3 billion annually to pay for the medical costs related to obesity by 2020. We view Senate File 1068 as one that simply removes a simple barrier to physical activity by clarifying school liability for use of their recreational facilities by the community. It's a simple, cost-effective way to make more facilities available and contribute to a future healthier Minnesota. This bill, in our view, will help create more opportunities to get kids off the sofa, out to Little League, away from the bear claws and the Yoo-Hoo, and we view that as a good thing. So we would urge your support today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of those? Senator Harrington.
Not really a question, Mr. Chair, just a comment. I would like to speak in support of this bill also. Having run a police athletic league program, we started our first program in a St. Paul school building. We could not find space in Parks and Recreation at the time. We had about 125 young men who desperately needed to get off the streets and do something more constructive than they were doing. And I can tell you that it was a cumbersome process working through all of the different decisions and all the different liability issues that confronted us to allow the police department to run a program after hours in a St. Paul public school. Ultimately, we were able to because we had lawyers and they had lawyers, and between all those lawyers, we somehow managed to sort this all out and actually get the kids off the streets and get them into a program. But I really do think that this will clarify the language. I think it will simplify. Those buildings are there. They are a great community asset, and I think we should be using them more, frankly. And anything that we can do that will help simplify that for community groups to allow that access, I think, is a positive. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Harrington. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to comment. This bill does have wide bipartisan support, and thank you, Senator Harrington, for being a co-author, as well as Senator Thompson, and not on this committee, Senator Scheid and Senator Vanderveer are also co-authors. And it has wide bipartisan support in the House, in that other body as well.
You're new, aren't you?
He's good.
I don't know.
Is there a tabling motion?
You know.
Senator Daley, one question I wanted to ask. Have you talked to anyone in a school district or a school board association regarding this language?
We have, and they've been neutral, I would say.
Okay. Anyone else to testify? I know that Mr. Carlson is on our schedule. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice, an organization I've represented since 1994. And in addition to that, I want you to know that I'm an appointed member of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, the state agency that is responsible for promoting youth athletics. On a pro bono basis, I represent Minnesota Hockey, the largest youth hockey organization in the country. No one, I think, is more supportive of the concept of what is trying to be done here than the Amateur Sports Commission and me. However, having said that, we do have some concerns about the bill and what we believe are not just small but maybe significant unintended consequences. And it is our position that this is not really a, just a clarification of the law, but that it provides, you know, an overly broad expansion of the law that, that we think is in need of further further work. And here's why we say that. If you look at the bill, Mr. Chair and members, the definition of while school is in session is not defined. Does that mean that at 2:30, when school class lets out, that their responsibility drops from one of reasonable care now to a trespasser standard? It is not defined. It is also defined, but you need to know that schools own more than just classrooms. Schools, I got into a little dust-up last year over indoor air quality in ice arenas. I learned that schools own a significant number of ice arenas, football stadiums. All of those that are in use when school is not in session now would have this lower standard in subdivision 2 that which is owed to a trespasser. And so we don't think that is their standard of liability right now. And while we support the idea of making certain that these facilities are open for public use, and many of them are open constantly, you know, we just think that this language in an unintended way goes too far. You know, there is. I also have a question about school pools that are not included in the recreational use statute, not the one that's talked about here, but 466.6 subdivision 6F. And that really is only a trespasser standard while the pool is closed, and it doesn't even apply, specifically apply to school pools, which are now picked up in this language, and so we have a concern about that. And lastly, Mr. Chairman and members, you know, we do have some concern. I've worked on dozens of immunity issues over the years, and this is the first time I've had an immunity issue that has been brought to me that isn't being promoted by the groups that are actually getting the protection. No one from the schools have come to me to say that this is a problem, that they're not able to open up their schools. We're happy to work with them and others to make certain that the law is clear, but we think that this effort, as drafted, just simply goes too far. And there, one last point, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Latz or Senator Ortman, Senator Thompson can maybe inform the committee of what the standard is in the bill relative to a trespasser. But you also need to know that there is a different standard for children who are trespassers. And one of the concerns that I think will be expressed to you is that, or should be expressed to you, is that the standard for a, for trespassing children is substantially higher than reasonable care. It is a standard that not only requires the possessor of property to use reasonable care, but it also imposes on them a duty to try and protect children, which is higher than the standard of liability that the districts have right now. So those are just unintended consequences of the language of the bill. We're happy to try and work those through to make certain the facilities are open, but as written, we think it has some significant work that needs to be done. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, did you have a question at this time?
I did, Mr. Chair. To whoever can answer this, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, my district is rural, and we do have community centers in our district membership. And I like the idea, so I'm not speaking for or against right now, but I do have a question as to funding it. If I just know in rural Minnesota, if we open up the schools, automatically there has to be somebody on the grounds, you know, after hours. And I'm curious, maybe there's a school board member or a administrator that's I have the letter here. I just don't know how we pay for that. Where does that money come from? And I just did speak to Senator Harrington how it worked in St. Paul, but it's a different set of circumstances. You know, the the troubled youth in my area probably aren't as high as St. Paul. So it's a different apples and oranges. That's my one concern. How do I go home and say, well, if you do this, ultimately somebody's going to have to pay to have somebody on the grounds?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
I'd like Rachel to respond to Senator Hoffman's inquiry as well as some of the points that were just made by Mr. Carlson.
Right. Ms. Callahan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, that's a very good question, and frankly, our bill does not address the cost issue, and that's why clearly schools will have maintained their existing discretion when and how and under what circumstances. I know some schools do charge fees. Some schools or community groups do fundraising efforts to try to help pay for the costs of maintaining or providing supervision or janitorial, whatever it may be, the cost of using the property. Some seek grants from local businesses, for example, and sponsorships. So there are some ways to help defray the cost. Our bill today is not going to be able to address all those concerns.
Mr. Carlson.
Yeah, and then just a few points, and I've had several conversations with Mr. Carlson about this bill, and we have agreed to try to work out some of the differences. Again, our intent is not to broadly change the law, and so we are happy to work with them. If that is the unintended consequence, we would be happy to hear any language suggestions they have to tighten that up. But I just wanted to hit on a couple of points that Mr. Carlson made. One point was that schools have more than just their classroom property. They have hockey rinks, et cetera. Under current law, under Subdivision 6E, under parks and recreation areas, the courts have said that school district property, including sports facilities, are considered to be recreational facilities under that area of the law already. So that is already addressed. And as I already mentioned, that trespasser standard already applies under 6E. So that's not a change in the law directly. It's because we're repeating that same trespasser standard in our new subdivision. So that shouldn't be a concern for the schools. If it is and there's a language change we need to make, we'd be happy to talk about that. Also regarding the pools, and Mr. Carlson referenced this subdivision 6F, and you probably don't have the full statute in front of you. I happen to have it in front of me. Under that area, under that subdivision, it's very specific to closed pools. It specifically removes school districts from the definition of municipalities under that subdivision. We are not making any changes to that area of the law. And so, again, if there's an unintended consequence of interaction between our new subdivision and that area, we would be happy to work that through and sort that out. We don't believe there is any interaction there at this time. And then on the point about the first time an outside group bringing a bill forward like this, well, there's a first time for everything. Mm-hmm. And I will say that we have talked with community groups. Richfield School District did submit a letter that should be in your packets in support of getting clarity in this area of the law. So, I think while some of the bigger entities around the state aren't proactively fighting for this, the Minnesota School Boards Association have stated that they're neutral because they have other priorities that they're looking at. We have talked with the school superintendents group, community ed group. They are fine with this language and this bill advancing. So I think we are definitely headed in the right direction. There's a call for this change to be made. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Daley, this is a great bill. I think it's great if folks have more access to the resources we've paid for. If you're talking about school facilities, who paid for them? The community paid for them. And so the community should have access, and the school shouldn't be overly concerned about lawsuits in allowing folks access to facilities that they've built and paid for. So I think you're heading in the right direction. I do have a couple of suggestions for you, and I want to point out there's no requirement that anybody change their practices in their school district. This just clarifies that if folks do use their facilities, then this is the standard of law that will be applied to those cases. So nobody's required to make any changes in practices or anything. However, I am concerned about negligent maintenance. So if the school district knew or should have known that there was faulty playground equipment, or there were problems with the gym, or there was, you know, an air quality issue, and they know about it, then they should not then also be immune from liability if they knew about it. So I would like to offer the A2 amendment.
We'll wait a moment, Senator Ortman, as the amendment's being passed out. Senator Daley, do you have a copy of the amendment?
I have not seen the amendment.
We'll get
Chair.
You one. Sir Ortman, you can start on your explanation, and then we...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the A2 amendment does is simply add in the limits of the liability for a school district under line 1.13 so that subdivision that further explains, it says nothing in the subdivision would limit the liability for trespasser damages or for negligent maintenance of equipment. Pretty clear that if they know that the equipment is faulty, they need to close it. And nothing would spare them from liability if they've made available to the public facilities that they knew were in negligent repair. And I would hope that members would support that. I think it's a reasonable attempt to clarify what the school's responsibilities are and further explain that standard of conduct for them.
Senator Daley, do you have any comment?
Mr. Chair, I would look at this as a friendly amendment. Not having thoroughly studied it and understanding all the implications, it seems like a reasonable addition to the language, so I would be supportive.
Further discussion on the amendment? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the negligent part, I certainly agree with that. If they're not keeping the equipment in order, how broad is that, however? Is it my only concern would be if there was hard use and abuse of a child swing or a slide, I guess Senator Ortman, would it limit the liability then if somebody was out there really using it hard and all of a sudden the chain broke on a swing, for instance, unbeknown to the school district? Would it?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. I think that is the epitome of the negligent standard, which is if they didn't know, then they're not liable. I mean, if they knew that the swing was likely to break because the chains were loose and they knew about it, then there's nothing that's protecting them from liability here, and you would want that. You would want the parent who takes the kids to the swing set and puts them on it to have the peace of mind to know that the equipment is either properly maintained or it's been closed off and there's been signs and things like that. But this doesn't put any new standard on a school district to do anything different. That's the key. The question is, what's the standard of law that applies if somebody gets hurt, files a lawsuit, what are we going to do? And that's what we're talking about now, is all that way down the chain of what ifs, if you will. And so I think this is pretty... I think people should be able to have an expectation that if somebody knows that the equipment is faulty or should have known that the equipment is faulty, they closed it off from public access.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Daley.
I've received some additional information in the last few seconds that affects my decision to be supportive at this moment. I think I am, in general, still supportive, but there are some other unintended consequences, some other implications that have recently been brought to my attention that if the gentleman could testify a little bit more specifically about those concerns.
All right.
be helpful, I think, for our decision.
Thank you. Before we get to that, I'm going to ask counsel, Senate counsel, to describe the difference between knowing of a maintenance issue or just simply being negligent.
Mr. Chairman and members, negligence doesn't necessarily require that you know something, but it's kind of a reasonable person standard. So under the circumstances, a reasonable person maybe should have known that a slide shouldn't have been closed and didn't, so you sort of had reason to know, or perhaps a piece of equipment came with directions that every year you were supposed to do certain safety checks on it or something like that, and you just ignored those directions, and 5 years later, there's an injury. That arguably would be negligence because a reasonable person would have been complying with those maintenance instructions. So.
Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Grundhofer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities, but also representing the Minnesota School Districts Association today. Couple comments on your amendment, Senator Ortman. First, it isn't amending this new section. It's amending the existing 6E, which affects not only schools, but affects cities, counties, all local units of government, and frankly, indirectly affects the state because of the court decisions that basically say that you have to treat local governments the same as the state for purposes of immunities. So indirectly, you're sort of implicating all units of government. Second, the existing provision in there that says nothing in this subdivision limits the liability of a municipality for conduct that would entitle a trespasser to damages.
Mr. Grundhofer, could I interrupt? I saw that you were looking at the bill, but we're on an A1 amendment changes Section 2.
Understood. I'm referring
to... You are referring to the amendment?
I am referring to the amendment because I think the Ortman amendment makes an amendment, suggests a change to existing 6E. No?
Senator Ortman has introduced an amendment to the amendment.
I am sorry. Apologize.
All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none, the amendment is before us. Senator Ortman moved the A1 amendment, or the A2 amendment, to amend the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. The bill is before Senator Ortman.
I'm not going to offer an amendment to make any further changes, Senator Daley, but I want to encourage you to look at that word pool and do the legal analysis, because we have much higher standards in the law for pool and kids that drown and protecting kids from the potential of drowning. They are much higher. And I don't want to lower any standards for anybody with respect to making pools accessible to children. And so I would encourage you to look long and hard, think long and hard about whether you want to include that word in this bill.
Mr. Carlson. I'm sorry, Senator Lantz.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, I'd rather try to address it in front of the Judiciary Committee than on the floor of the Senate.
All right.
I wonder if we can get some legal advice on the implications of including pool on line 1.8.
While counsel is thinking about that, I'm going to go with Mr. Carlson here for his testimony. And then, Sarah Marty, I'll follow up with you.
Mr. Chairman and members, I know Mr. Grundhofer left the witness stand, but I think he was trying to make a point about the duties that they have under the current trespasser standard of conditions that they know about. And I think that was the point he was trying to convey to the committee, regardless of where it fit into the amended bill. I think that was – I had a point, Mr. Chairman. I do think the pool is an expansion, and I do think that we need some greater clarity onto the definition of what a school day is. the way that it's worded right now, you would have to assume that their liability, both in subdivision 2, because they specifically say their duty doesn't change while the school is in session. You'd have to, that the only logical way to read that is that we are changing their duties when they are not in session. So, I mean, I think the way it's worded, we're doing more than just clarifying what the standards are right now, and that, I think, needs some additional work as to what that school day is and what facilities this new standard would apply to.
To that point, Senator Newman?
Me too.
Well, we'll go with Senator Marty first. He's first.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley or whomever, I think I was concerned about that not in session two. I was, ancient times, I was in high school in another state. We had a track team in the winter. We'd practice running through the halls because it was there was a round circuit you could do in the school building. It was a school built in the 1930s or 40s and narrow halls with lockers in. And there was no warning for everybody to clear out. I mean, I was surprised nobody got killed doing it. I mean, it was a nightmare being in there. And it was after school was in session. Matter of fact, I don't think in those practices we wait an hour for the halls to be cleared out. But it was clearly during a school day with school staff and so on, and school was not in session. It had been several hours earlier in the day, and clearly I would hope no school district would be trying that sort of thing these days. But in effect, are we changing what the duty, the existing duty of people who are working for the school district, working with students, but it's not during the school, is not in session, and it's clearly intended to be after that or on weekends. I don't know what that means. I mean, is school in session in the bill intended to mean when school lets out, or is it meant to be after those extracurricular activities that are clearly school functions?
Sir, Ms. Callahan, would you be able to answer that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, our understanding and reading of the case law that has been generated through looking at 6E, that those after-school activities are considered to be, those kinds of activities are considered to be recreational, and so they would fall under the current 6E provision. And another point that I wanted to make back to the swimming pools question, there is one Supreme Court case and I believe a Court of Appeals, I can't remember if it's unpublished or published, case that do specifically apply the subdivision 6E, Parks and Recreation subdivision, to swimming pools, and they apply a trespasser standard in those cases. So I think there is precedent that 6E does apply to swimming pools, and that trespasser standard has been applied.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the question of whether or not a school is in session, frankly, I really don't see that as being a big impediment here at all. Rather, I would say that whether or not a school is in session would be a fact issue that would be determined under the specific facts of the case as they are presented. And undoubtedly, if we are involved in a jury trial, a judge is going to give the jury some definition of whether or not it's in session on the basis of the case law. So I just don't see that definition of whether or not we are in session is a real important issue. The pool issue, I think, is a much better question.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, can probably get away from that if on line 1.16 you delete occurring while school is not in session, and on 1.15 delete while school is in session. So then you would have a similar language to what is contained in 6E, relative to claims arising out of recreational use, but in subdivision 2, you would clearly say that you're not changing any duty that the school district, staff, or others authorized to be on the school property is not changed. And so you don't have, if we're trying to bring clarity, Senator Newman, we don't want to have to litigate over whether or not school's in session or not. If we're trying to bring clarity, we can just delete that section, delete while school is in session on line 1.15. I would also suggest deleting pool on line 1.18, but then you're at least getting more clearly to what you're trying to get at, and I would want the opportunity to run that past, you know, our council. There's a case that I'm concerned about that is why we have concerns about the trespasser standards, and it was a rape case in the swimming pool locker room in Spring Lake Park High School after school. And my concern is that by saying that and the school district did not take action to prevent that when they saw the perpetrator going in and out of the pool locker room, my concern is that when we apply a trespasser standard to that fact scenario, that would obtain a result that no one would think is just. And so that's why we're very concerned about changing the standard in a way that is unintended from what any of you would want to see happen.
Senator Ordman.
Chair and Mr. Carlson, was that a civil case?
Yes.
That was brought? And if you're going to use it as an example, why don't you tell us, was there liability on the part of the school?
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and members, they did find liability on behalf of the school. And the school, the school's position was that although they had seen the perpetrator going in and out of the girls' locker room, that they that it was a discretionary act whether or not they went to investigate that. And the court found that it was not discretionary. It was a ministerial act when you see that kind of activity. However, that was based on their discretionary act immunity. If they are able to now argue that because of this recreational use statute and that being a recreational activity, we don't have ministerial duties. We only have the duty that would entitle a trespasser to damage. And that's why we absolutely support the concept of where everyone wants to go here. We just want to make sure that the language does not create an unintended or absurd result, as it could be argued may have happened in that case.
Ms. Callanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to address the case that Mr. Carlson just raised. We talked about it a little bit before committee started. My understanding is that recreational use was not raised by the school, or at least it wasn't part of the court decision. And as Mr. Carlson stated, the decision was based on discretionary immunity, and it sounds like the school was found to be liable. And so in my view, and I'm not familiar with that case at all, because it wasn't part of our analysis for 6E, my understanding is that that situation did not apply under the recreational use statute.
And Mr. Chair and members, well, it was not raised as a defense in that specific situation. I don't see any reason why, if this new law is adopted, it could not be asserted as a defense. That's our concern.
Further discussion? Sarah Marty.
Mr. Chair, in terms of the using, the intent of this, I assume, and from what I've talked with both witnesses yesterday about this, the goal is to deal when people outside of the school are using the school. In other words, the school is allowing its property to be used, and I think all the schools in my district are working with cities and rec departments to do this, but it's not to be changing anything for the school's own use. But it's when it's for the public. And I don't have the exact language here, but what if we were to go the approach of any claim for loss or injury occurring from use of dropping when, while school is not in session, from use of school property or facility, including such and such, or other areas available to the public, by the public? In other words, when it's by a non-school-related group using it. because that's what I'm hearing the goal of the bill is. And clearly, I mean, events that are, whether it's during school, while school is in session, or evenings or weekends, when they're school-hosted or sponsored activities, that seems to be not what I hear the intent of the bill is about. And so if instead of talking about when it is, instead of talking about whom it is, whom we're trying to protect the districts from gaining more liability from. In other words, if you make this facility open to the public, for the public use, for public recreational use, then we should limit the liability in that case, not from the school for any school-hosted or sponsored activities. I don't care what time of the day or night it is. I mean, isn't that the goal of what your bill is, Senator Daley? In other words, if the school is using it, I don't care whether it's the classroom teacher or gym teacher or a coach or whomever, when it's a school activity, a Saturday debate thing or a cross-country meet or whatever, when it's a school-hosted or sponsored activity, that's not what you're trying to change. You're trying to change it when the public is using it. In other words, we're making this available to the public. And I'm wondering if instead of using the language about while school is in session, instead on line 1.8 or wherever, talk about when being used by the public in a non-school sponsored event.
Ms. Callanan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, to try to address your question, and I don't know that I have the exact answer that you're going to want to hear, but our understanding from looking at the case law is that sometimes the school recreational use is, even if it's a school-sponsored activity, still the recreational use immunity does apply. And so our goal here, as I've already stated many times, is to not change the current status of law. So I think if you wanted to head in that direction, that might be a change to the current status of the law, and that's something that I think the stakeholders then would want to be involved in that conversation. And we'd be willing to have that conversation.
Chair Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Callahan, I'm not quite sure what it is that would be changing. I'm concerned what you've got here is the opposite thing where school-sponsored events, and I'm thinking mainly of athletic things, in a football field and a gymnastics thing or something, that you're totally changing, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but you're totally changing the liability the school district would have, not because it's a school activity, but because of the time of day it is. And maybe I'm reading that wrong, but it sure seems to me we're saying that when the school is not in session, gymnastics, I mean, I keep thinking some of the sports are high-risk activities, and the schools are dealing with them. We've got them dealt with in a responsible way now, but saying we're going to put trespasser standard on it if it happens to be different hours of the day.
Ms. Callanan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, Subdivision 6E and the case law that interprets that subdivision would still stand as law. Our change would not change existing law as it's been interpreted under 6E. And so we're not touching that. Our goal was to carve out this area, and we believe that under existing law, there are different standards for the school day, for students, staff, et cetera, and it is not our goal to change that, and that's why in the amendment, the last two lines, we add specifically reiterated our intention. None of this reduces any existing duty owed by the school district while school is in session. We think there is a line there, and so our goal is to cover those activities outside of the school day. If there's a different way of approaching that, we'd be happy to work with you, Senator Marty, and refine that language. And I believe this bill is going to another committee, so we would have the opportunity to work on that language before it gets to the Government Operations Committee.
Chair Marty.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Callahan, I think your line 1.15 should take out the while school is in session then, because the duty owed by the school district to student, staff, or others authorized to be present on the school property, that's nothing to do with the after-school activities. I mean, Sarah Newman was saying that, oh, that would be a jury instruction thing. I'm not an attorney, but it just strikes me as that's a whole, I would not interpret school being in session at 5 in the evening or on a Saturday. I just don't think I'd say that. If you took out the language of when the school is in session on 115 and I don't know about the earlier use, taking it out of there, then it doesn't seem to me you're changing the responsibility during those activities. I think if you aren't taking that out, then you've got a total change.
Further discussion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carlson, the case that you were describing up in Spring Lake Park, did that involve a member of the general public? Did it involve a student?
Yes.
I'm just curious how to distinguish that particular case as, say, an unintended consequence to this bill.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman absolutely was a member of the public who came into the public school, was not a student, was not there for anything other than to do harm. The victim was a student participating in a swimming class at the school pool.
Ms. Pontius, if we're one to remove the language on line 16, occurring while school is not in session, what does that do to the liability? Can you make a determination?
Mr. Chairman, then we are also looking at doing it on 1.15 as well.
That was a suggestion. The way I read it, at least on line 1.15, if we removed while school is in session, I would think that that would make the school district less liable if we removed it there. And maybe you could clarify for me if I'm going down the right track here.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, I think that would broaden the immunity by taking out occurring while school is not in session.
Okay. And then the reference on 1.6?
Mr. Chairman, then if you were also to take it out on 1.15 while school is not in session, then you'd sort of have that clause reading a duty to individuals authorized to be present on school property, and then it kind of raises the question of who's authorized to be present, and is that the general public?
Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Marty?
I think if you're going to take the approach of taking out that while school is in session, you'd have to make it clear that the claims for loss or injury were occurring are talking about by whom? In other words, by people not at school-sponsored activities. In other words, if you were to take out that, and I think that's, I'd be interested in an amendment to take out that language in 1.6, but then you'd have to say somewhere like in 1.8, when being used by the public at a non-school-sponsored event. Because otherwise, you're not doing anything. What we're trying to say is, it doesn't matter what time of the day you're using it, but when you're making it available to the public, not the school sports team, not the school's newspaper group or whatever, I mean, goes on in the school, not the school-sponsored activities, but when you're making it available to the public, that's you're trying to say a different standard for using it by the public, not by the school staff and students. That's it.
Any discussion on that point? Senator Latz?
I think I agree with the point Senator Marty is making because, see, on line 1.7, you could just as easily put a period after the word facility, and that's your main immunity language that you've got right now. And then including but not limited to, and then they specify a couple of circumstances where that to make sure that immunity would extend. But it's a pretty broad grant of immunity. I think we would need that clarification for school activities that are happening after the final bell rings. We don't want to change those standards. I'm also getting the sense here that maybe this bill isn't quite ready for prime time. We're sitting here trying to be lawyers on this bill in about three or four different sections. There's some disagreement about whether this bill actually reflects and clarifies current law. I'm not comfortable with the prospect of the Government Operations Committee doing the Judiciary Committee's work on this bill, so just passing it on to them. I do see a number of concerns about the bill, and as we're kind of scripting through this, I share the goal I think that everyone here shares, but I'm concerned about whether the language that's in here accomplishes that goal without causing more problems.
Sir Ortman.
Well, Mr. Chair, as a member of this committee for 8 years, this is, in my experience, what we do, and we do it well. We help to shape a bill and the author's intention into a way that it can pass legal muster. That's why we're here. And that it can be understood by the general public as well. So I think we're doing exactly what is expected of us. I think it's a good bill, and I think we can help Senator Daley. I think we're close. I think there was an amendment, was there not, to take out this language? Can you just repeat, Mr. Chair, what the current amendment is? It was an amendment offered?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think there were just discussions. No one's offered a formal amendment.
Mr. Chair, my question for counsel would be, if you took out that language while school is not in session on line 1.6, in fact, taking out occurring while school is not in session, so it read any claim for a loss or injury occurring or arising from the use of school property or school facility, that would maintain the current law. There would be a question, as would be appropriate, to a jury or a judge as to whether school was in session and whether or not that's a factor. If you take that out, then it doesn't leave the confusion, I think, about the hours and whether that matters or not. That can then become an issue that the court deals with, whether or not that's a factor that the jury should be made aware of when it comes time to whether this was a question of whether there was, you know, reasonableness or a trespasser. I think if we take that, we might want to consider taking that language out because it creates more ambiguity rather than less.
Ms. Callanan.
I just wanted to address the question about school-sponsored activities, and that's language that we did wrestle with and look at and consider including in this, and we decided that we did not want to include that in our proposed subdivision because under case law for subdivision 6E, school-sponsored activities do fall already under 6E, and they have been interpreted under 6E. So there's a couple cases that I'd be happy to provide citations for, and so we don't think that it's necessary or advisable to limit this to school-sponsored activities.
Sir Marty?
Mr. Chair, Senate Council had put together an amendment that was trying to do what I was hoping, and I think it's close to what Senator Ortman was just saying, maybe not, she can comment on that. But if you could try that amendment, giving the language for what you were putting in there.
Mr. Chair, members, on working off of the A1 amendment, on page 1, line 6, delete occurring while school is not in session. And then on line 7, after facility, insert by the general public. And then on line 15, after session, at the end of the sentence, insert or during school-sponsored activities.
And Mr. Chairman, that would what we're trying to say is if you're making the facility available, which is when the goals, making the facilities available to the public, in other words, beyond what the school would be using them for, we're saying when the general public's using it, that's what would be covered, not based on the timing of it. And for the language at the end, I had thought take out while school is in session, but Senate Council said, in effect, it would not change any of the existing duty of any of the school-sponsored things.
Council, could I ask for clarification on the first part of that amendment? Going up to lines 1.6, the proposal is suggesting that we remove the words occurring while school is not in session. and there was a reference, new language read by the general public. Where does that fit in?
Mr. Chairman, it would be on page 1, line 7 of the amendment, after facility. So it would read, arising from the use of school property or a school facility by the general public.
And then do we leave the rest of the sentence intact as it goes through to line 1.9?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
All right. Does everyone understand this amendment? Is there a discussion? Ms. Callanan, do you have any comment about the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think our concern about taking out or sort of in that last section about the school-sponsored activity, we fear that that could actually discourage then those school-sponsored activities, like say your school wants to sponsor a 5K run and general members of the public are coming. It would be a school-sponsored activity, and then that now would not have this immunity protection as a school-sponsored activity. So I think that's one of the reasons that we were nervous about including that language in our original version of the bill.
Mr. Carlson.
Senator Marty.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask Ms. Callan, I mean, if a school is sponsoring a 5K run now, aren't they already have the current, I mean, this is not changing that in effect. I don't mind striking the words while school is in session on line 1.15, but I just got the sense that if you left it in there, this is not reducing any duty, including during those events. I don't think it matters if you either strike while school is in session or add the during school sponsored activities, but this is not adding anything new. It's just simply saying it doesn't reduce any duty that they already have during those things.
Council, do you have any comment on this discussion?
Mr. Chairman, perhaps you could say on 1.15 be while school is in session or during school-sponsored student activities. That would narrow it.
That'd be fine. Marty? That seems fine.
Would you want to incorporate that into your
amendment? I'd incorporate that in.
Senator Mr. Marty, Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Could I ask that we divide those questions? I think that we've got three occurring while school is not in session, and then we've got the second one, which is during school-sponsored activities, and then we've got the third one about the general public. Maybe if we could just take those one at a time, it would be a little easier to manage the conversation and the votes.
All right. Senator Marty, there's
Mr.
been a
Chairman,
call to divide.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I think it's certainly divisible. I'd say the two of them, the ones on line 1.6 and 1.7, I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding somebody, it seems those two would go together. The other one, I agree, is a slightly different issue. But so I think, in other words, any claim, if we're trying to be saying we're doing anything different, we're trying to clarify the stuff, any claim for loss or injury, we're talking about by the general public.
Sir Ortman, where would you suggest the division occur?
Divide each of them. I think it's divisible.
Mr. Chair, I think we have taken ourselves deep into the weeds without needing to be there. And so I think that the Marty Amendment just goes a little further than we have to accomplish its purposes. And that's why I'm hoping we'll divide it. The first one, and then he offered some more to it. And so I'm just trying to say, let's take this in edible bites here. Because I think that if you take out occurring while school is not in session, we've accomplished everybody's purposes here. Because then it will be a question of standing to sue. It will be a question that the courts can handle. But I think we're not trying to be proactive in changing the way schools act. What we're really trying to do is say, if schools act a certain way and somebody gets hurt and somebody files a lawsuit, then what's the legal standard? And I think we've just made our work unnecessarily hard here. I think we accomplish a lot with that First Amendment, and that's why I would ask Senator Marty to just take that portion up now, because everybody can, I think,
Mr.
from
Chair,
what I've heard, people can support that part.
Mr. Chair, we clearly can divide it. And I actually thought the second part, that by the general public, effect fell in with that, and I'm trying to figure out what it means without it, but go ahead, let's take them in the order they are, line 1.6, then the second one, 1.7, and then the 1.15.
Does everyone understand the division of the amendment? Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
On the first one?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
On the first one?
Motion prevails. Yeah. That was on the first one. The remainder of the amendment is before us. Senator Latz.
On that point, I think it is important to include by the general public, and this fits with the comment I made earlier, that without that, you could put a period after the word facility, and it's a much broader statement in terms of liability immunity. But if the purpose of this is to focus in on the general public's use of the facilities, I think you need to have that there to tailor this provision toward the use that's intended to be dealt with by the bill.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, if you would, are you trying to get to the concept of invitee?
What?
Invitee, meaning somebody's invited onto the premises and that invitee should not have a trespass standard. I think that's what you're trying to get at.
Senator Latz.
I'm trying to keep the bill focused on the intent here. I mean, the bill is saying there's basically a trespass standard when the doors get opened up to the general public. And I want to make sure that the bill remains focused on the general public access to the facility.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
It's starting to sound like a bunch of legalese in here. I know the eyes are starting to glaze over, and Senator Hoffman is looking at me cross-eyed. but I think there's a distinction between trespass and an invited guest, and that's what we're debating now. Is we are trying to make sure that an invited guest has a different standard than a trespass, and I think by putting that language in, Mr. Carlson, I think it goes further than we need to, and now you're allowing a different set of liabilities and immunities for invited guests. So there's an art show at the high school, which I've been to many times. My kids were artists. I show up because they've got a general art show. We don't want that to be a trespass standard. We want that to be an invited guest standard. That's different in the law. And so I think if you put that by the general public, I think you're changing those relationships, honestly. And I think it goes further than we need to because the courts already have a different standard for invited guests than they do for the trespassers or the general public uninvited to the premises. I know, Senator Hoffman. Keep shaking her head, but I think that we don't need to go this route. I think we can allow the courts to work this through on whether somebody is an invited guest or a trespasser.
Senator Newman?
You're putting.
Right. Senator Ortman, try this one. Instead of instead of after school facility by the general public, because they were talking about school facilities, if we went to the line 1.9 and 1.8 and 1.9, if we would say made available to the public for public recreational activities.
Yeah. Yep.
Would work.
Would that work?
Yep-er, that works. Does.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley?
You got your hand up before I do.
I think we ought to do a couple minutes of push-ups and sit-ups and go for a time.
Mental gymnastics, Senator Daley.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think that in addition to helping the bill by making it clear that it's the public, it takes away my problem of this being used as a defense on the Spring Lake Park case that I had mentioned to you. So I think that it does help clarify the bill. I have an additional comment when we get to the third part of Senator Marty's amendment.
Just for everyone's benefit, Senator Newman, can you go through that language again?
Senator Newman, could you clarify the amendment that you were describing?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Line 1.8 would read, to the public, you see where that is, to the public for public recreational activities.
Would add public on that.
And Mr. Chair, however, it's simplest whether I withdraw the middle portion of my amendment or incorporate his language into that, however you want to handle it.
Senator Marty
withdraw mine.
Adopts the Newman language into his amendment. One question for counsel.
line 1.8, does the word "to the public" need to be in that sentence?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. I think you could just say "made available for public recreational activity" instead of "to the public for public recreational activity."
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. Sarah Marty, would you adopt that into your... So, Sarah Marty, would you want to explain your amendment in total?
Sarah Newman's suggestion with your edits to it is what the amendment is. Namely, we take out, we're not adding anything new to 1.7, so we read, including but not limited to playground, et cetera, outdoor area made available for public recreational activity.
Does everyone understand amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
Okay, I think maybe Senator Newman and I were conferring, and we're not on the same page. I wonder, and I thought what he had suggested was to move that language from line 1.8 up to 1.7 after the word "facility." Is that not what the amendment is?
For public, right here.
Senator Newman.
It's better where it is.
Mr. Chairman, no, Senator Latz, my intent was to amend it as Senator Marty has just described. So I am comfortable at this point with the amendment being made available for public recreational activities on lines 1.8 and 1.9.
Mr. Chairman,
you're talking about something different.
Mr. Chairman, I am talking about something a little bit different. I think it's important because after the word "facility" on 1.7, the including but not limited to specifies some areas where the previous active clause would apply, the broad immunity that is there. That goes to my comment about putting a period after facility. So if we want to limit the new liability provision to that which is made available for public recreational activity, I think you want to have that right after facility on line 1.7. And then you could still have the including but not limited to, and you could specify a couple of the areas where it certainly will apply. But otherwise, you've got "or any indoor or outdoor area made available for public recreational activity." That's in addition to or included within the broader immunity, but the broader immunity provision could be read to be more than just what's the included but not limited to language. I'm worried about allowing that broader provision to stand on its own as well. I could be corrected, and maybe I'm just reading this whole thing wrong. But.
Ms. Pontius, any comment?
Mr. Chairman, to add to the confusion, I've got a possible suggestion. But on page 1, line 7, after facility, insert "that is made available for public recreational activity." And then on line 1.8, after "area," insert a period and delete the rest of the sentence.
That's, Mr. Chair, that's exactly what I had in mind. Ms. Pontius is brilliant.
So you're really sucking up,
Mr.
aren't
Chairman.
You?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty.
So the middle part of my divided amendment by Senator Ortman as done by Senator Newman with editing help from Senator Limmer, and then new suggestion from Senate Counsel. So I think that does sound good, and I'm hoping people like the amendment now.
Senator Ortman?
Senator Daley, I just think maybe if there's room for more authors, you got quite a few here that should take some credit here.
Well, Senator Daley, you had to bring up that reference of the other body when you started. That's what started the whole thing going. Does everyone understand the comments from Ms. Pontius?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could you repeat that so I know what I'm going to vote on here?
Mr. Chairman, members, well, first of all, on 1.6, we've already deleted "occurring while school is not in session." So now on 1.7, after facility, insert "that is made available for public recreational activity." And then on 1.8, after "area," insert a period and delete the rest of the sentence. So it'll read, any claim for a loss or injury arising from the use of school property or a school facility that is made available for public recreational activity, including but not limited to, or any other indoor or outdoor area.
Any further questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I don't have any questions on that. I think it's a good way to resolve it. And then I must say that I'm very, very impressed that the attorneys on the committee now have been able to determine the difference between a trespasser and an invited guest. So I'm very glad we got to that. We were able to get to that very, very quickly today. So.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I've learned one thing. I thought I was doing right by creating a workable seating arrangement, but I noticed I put all three attorneys next to each other. That will never happen again. The amendment is before us. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment carries. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I still had the third part of the amendment, and I wanted to hear people's comments, because I think Senator Ortman was concerned about that. And I guess I wanted to hear, because what it was to add the words, or during school-sponsored student activities, I think the now wording was.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I think that was the distinction between the invited guest and the trespass, and I think we dealt with that issue. I think we've successfully identified that there's a different standard for an invited guest than there is for a trespasser on the property.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I concur. I have an additional concern about using school-sponsored events or that terminology, particularly as you look at line 1.12 where you have agent, and I don't want to provide this protection to those that are using the facility.
Could you speak up, Mr. Carlson?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I don't want to use that term school-sponsored activity if we can avoid it, because it then brings into the question of agency on 1.12, and then do their agents who are doing this activity pick up this protection, which no one, I don't think, is intending. So I think just deleting while school is in session, as you did on line 1.16, just makes it clear. And after we dispatch with that, I want to go back to the pool question.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to let everybody know there's another lawyer in the room, so maybe we should act on this really quick.
Maybe we should move him to Senator Youngbauer.
He should sit where Senator Youngbauer is. Can I move?
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'd just like to say that this discussion proves why they say that if we could take all the lawyers in America and permanently lay them end to end, that would be a good thing.
You're out of order, Mr.
Turner.
I will offer that as an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Can I move it? Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
I did hear a Shakespeare was right comment. Let me just clarify. Shakespeare's point there was that lawyers were the defense of liberty, and you needed to have the lawyers. It was those who were supporting the monarchy and the oppressive forces that wanted to kill all the lawyers first.
The preamble to that is, if you want
tyranny
and injustice to survive, first kill all the lawyers.
Even with the new times, you know, it is going to get dark soon. So,
I just want to remind our members we have 3-4 other bills, and we are going to remain here until they're all done.
I think it confuses it, though.
Senator Marty, you have an amendment consideration under the last half of this.
Mr. Chairman, I think from what I'm hearing, it would be smarter to strike the while school is in session than add the other stuff. I think I would move to strike the while school is in session like we did on line 1.6, because I'm hearing from both ears that they don't like the other one. So I'll move to strike the last five words.
Senator Marty, does that mean that you are going to remain with the other language stated or during school student-sponsored?
Yes, incorporate into my amendment. Drop that. Forget that third part of the amendment. Just delete the last few words.
Just put a period after school property?
Property, yes.
Ms. Pontius, if we remove the words while school is in session, I think I asked you before,
Does that make the school district less liable? And could you give clarification on this proposed amendment?
Oh, well, Mr. Chairman, I think by deleting the language there, you sort of raise an ambiguity because it refers to individuals authorized to be present on school property. So then the question is that the general public, they allow to be there?
Duty. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson.
When the school opens its building for a public activity, those are individuals that are authorized to be there. I don't think that that language does any damage to the
Mr. Carlson, you made mention of individuals, or you made mention or reference to the sentence in line 12 talking about an agent of the district, and now we have a reference of individuals authorized to be present on school property. Is there any conflict with that?
Mr. Chairman and members, no, because what the sentence says is it doesn't reduce any existing duty owed by those by the district to student, staff, or other authorized individuals. So I don't think that that is a conflict at all.
Ms. Callanan, do you have any comment regarding this?
I think that, Mr. Chair, I think the proposed change, we're fine with that at this point.
With Senator Marty's suggestion that we're about to vote on?
Yes.
All right. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, could you just repeat the amendment, please?
Senator Ortman, the way I understand the amendment, the words "while school is in session" will be stricken and replaced with a period.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. The bill is before us. Any further discussion? I don't even want to ask that question. any other comment from yes, Senator Latz?
I'd like to offer an amendment on line 1.8 to delete the word pool.
Thank you.
Any discussion? Ms. Callahan?
I'll just remind you, Mr. Chair and Senator Latz, that in fact 6E already does, through case law, address pools. So removing that word is not going to change that. It was never our intent to address what's happening in subdivision 6F, which has some very specific language around pool equipment when pools are closed. You probably don't have that subdivision in front of you. But I don't want to confuse those issues. There is under current case law, pools are addressed under 6E under recreational immunity. We are not seeking to change that. So I don't think that, I think pools will remain whether you take the word out or not.
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Latz.
Well, then it doesn't matter if we delete it, but if we include it and we create a more recently enacted subdivision that references pools, it might create some confusion. So better not to address it at all.
Senator Latz, by removing pool, that to me would mean that we would rely on case law reference regarding pools. Is that your intent?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes, existing case law.
Mr. Carlson.
Interpreting the statutes that already cover it.
All right. Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I do have subdivision 6F in front of me. And you need to know that that provision applies to swimming pools that are owned, leased, or operated by a municipality other than a school district. And so my point is leaving pools in here creates a confusion. It doesn't alleviate one. And so that is why I, would like you to delete pool from that line, because right now school district owned pools are not covered by subdivision 6F.
By deleting the word pool, are we giving from the legislature, are we giving a signal in any way regarding that case law and how it interrelates? Senator Orton?
Mr. Chair, to the contrary, I think that it reestablishes or reaffirms the standards we already have in statutes elsewhere. And rather than just saying that they would refer to case law, they will refer to the other statutes and the standards that we've already adopted for lawsuits regarding injuries related to pool use. And I think we should just leave it the way it is and not change it in any way.
Senator Ortman, if that directs the attention to statute, then does that negate case law?
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, it's just that there is well-established law through both case law and statutes about what folks' duties are with respect to swimming pools. And by taking that word out, we're not changing any of that. Right. And we're not adding any confusion. We're just maintaining current case law and statutory standards that apply.
All right. Any further discussion? There's a... Did we vote on the... On the amendment, getting rid of the words while school is in session. All right. So the bill is before us as amended. Oh, Senator Latz has the pool language.
Then, Mr. Chair, is to delete line 1.8, delete pool, comma.
Everyone understand the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Now the bill, Senate File 1068, is standing before us as amended. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would move the bill be recommended to pass. And can it go as amended to the floor?
No, this is going to the Local Government and Elections Committee, where I get to hear it all over again.
It will be substantially shorter.
And, Mr. Chair, hopefully you won't undo all of our good legal work in this committee, but I would hope that it be recommended to pass as amended.
I honor and revere the work of this committee. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Daigle's bill, I'm sure it clarifies the situation as I can see from my notes.
Is there any further discussion on the part of the public or anyone in the room wishing to speak for or against the bill?
Well, Ms. Mr. Callahan. Chair, just one final comment. I think that, as Senator Ortman just pointed out, this is a very confusing area of the law, and we're asking average members of the public to try to understand all of this, and all they're trying to do is get some exercise and use their community resources to do that. So I think it really points out the need for this bill. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Senator Ortman moves Senate File 1068 as amended be recommended to pass and be moved to the Local Government Elections Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Bill is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm going to go work out.
Mr. Chair.
Simplifying.
Senator Ortman, would you take the gavel?
I'm assuming Senator Hand probably brought some with him today.
I think Senator Hand was going to provide a
couple bags. She's not there yet.
Maybe.
Think. it's been worked on already.
Oh, okay.
I have this one. Yeah, I was on it. Yeah. You want it this year?
Absolutely not. Senator Limmer, we have Senate File 735, Municipal Tort Immunity, and we do have an author's amendment.
That's
Senator
correct,
Limmer.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senate File 735 deals with municipal tort immunity regarding donated public safety equipment. This bill amends the Municipal Tort Claims Act to provide a municipality immunity resulting from the use of public safety equipment that would be donated by a municipality unless a claim that is the direct result of fraud or intentional misrepresentation.
Definition of public safety and equipment is included, and the law would become effective August 1st of 2011. The A2 amendment is a reference to an expanded description of vehicles and equipment used in firefighting, ambulance, and emergency medical treatment services. And I would wish to offer that as an author's amendment, the A2 amendment.
Thank you. Members, Senator Limmer offers the A2 as an author's amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senator Limmer, the A2 is adopted.
I have representatives from the public safety community wishing to give comment regarding this bill. I don't know which one wants to speak first.
Chief Espenson.
Chief Espenson, did
yes.
I say that right? Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is George Espenson. I'm the fire chief for the city of Eden Prairie, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. This has been an ongoing effort of ours for the last several years, and the issue is really quite simple. When some jurisdictions are done with a piece of equipment because they're modernizing their fleet or certain aspects of their cache of equipment, it might still be usable in another jurisdiction that has a less intensive need for the equipment. And in previous to this bill being passed, which hopefully it will, many jurisdictions have been advised by their legal counsel, because of the way the current law is structured, not to donate that to another jurisdiction, but to send it out of the country. And that just doesn't seem right in the world of sharing resources and making the best use of taxpayer resources and dollars. And so this is an effort to clear that up and to hopefully allow jurisdictions to move equipment around where it's best needed.
Chief, can I ask, are you talking about gifts between law enforcement or fire organizations, or are you talking about gifts to more civilian units, if you will? I mean, I'm worried about that part, but it's among law enforcement agencies are the gifts?
Madam Chair, that is correct. And it wouldn't be something where we would just ship it to somebody. They would know that it was available, come and inspect it, see if it met the needs of their organization, and then we would donate it to them.
Thank you, sir. Senator Limmer, we also have Mr. Rosso, the city attorney from Eden Prairie.
Yes, Richard Rosso, Eden Prairie city attorney with the law firm of Gregerson, Rosso, Johnson & Nyland. Chief Espenson approached me a number of years ago asking for assistance on this to help craft language that would essentially make it desirable for agencies in the state to donate their equipment without fear of liability in case they negligently miss something. He didn't use that word, but that's what he was getting at. If we just miss something, it wasn't intentional. Otherwise, we're concerned about that responsibility. And whenever we donate, it is not we just ship it off. It's a situation where the municipality who's receiving the equipment knows about it, they come and inspect it, they review it, and then they take it. And that activity has been very restricted because of the concern about liability. So that's the purpose for this loss, continuing to make them responsible if there was any intentional misrepresentation or fraudulent behavior. In other words, you knew that the equipment was dangerous, or you made a statement about it not knowing that the statement was true. This piece of equipment is absolutely fabulous, and you don't know that. So there'd still be liability for those blatant violations of just common decency, but it would limit liability with respect to negligence.
Thank you, Mr. Rosso. I don't think that any municipality should have liability for giving a gift, and they are public resources. The general public has paid for them, and so they should be put into use and not just discarded because some municipality is concerned about immunity for that gift. Senator Newman is working on a very brief amendment, mm-hmm. Senator Limmer, that would address the question whether or not the gifting would be made to private organizations. I'm personally concerned about that, and Senator Newman said that he would offer the amendment as soon as council is ready with it. Are there questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you mentioned public safety as well. I don't think this, unless I'm not clear, this doesn't address the police department squad cars being handed down. The only reason I say that is, and I don't think that happens, but where it does happen is, and at least in my district, and I've been part of that process, is donating public safety equipment to the technical colleges for their use. So I'm not sure if that was ever addressed or would ever be addressed here. It's probably already covered in law. I certainly don't want to go back to where we were here a few minutes ago and get into that kind of a situation if it's something that needs to be done. But that isn't the intent, anyhow, of this particular statute.
Is that correct, Limmer?
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I know there was some discussion on the part of law enforcement community regarding this, but rather than bring forward an amendment, they are allowing this to go forward as they follow the legislation.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I would also point back to the original bill because the amendment defines the vehicles and equipment on lines 12 and 13, but on line 1.9 it does discuss public safety equipment donated by the municipality. So I think that would be broad enough to include the types of equipment you're looking at. I think the question is whether or not we can make the immunity broad enough to include a gift to a community college or technical college, and I think we probably can.
Ken?
Are you ready? Ms. Pontius has some proposed language. Ms. Pontius?
Madam Chair, it would just be on the bill on page 1, line 9, after municipality, insert to another municipality.
I would recommend to the committee that we deal with that amendment first, and then we can work to address Senator Ingebrigtsen's concerns. Senator Newman?
I would move that amendment.
Senator Limmer?
Madam Chair, that's a friendly amendment.
Thank you. Are there folks here that would like to testify either for or against the proposed amendment? Questions or comments? Senator Newman moves the changes read by Ms. Pontius on line 1.9. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Ms. Pontius, do you have a suggestion as to whether we can add in technical colleges or something to be broad enough to reach Senator Ingebrigtsen's concern?
Madam Chair and members, the definition of municipality includes basically all local governments. I think the technical colleges are actually state entities, so they would be under the State Tort Claims Act,
Madam Chair,
a different area of law.
Senator Limmer.
Technical colleges, for reference for this conversation, is under the auspices, I believe, of MNSCU.
And they would be included, Senator Limmer and Ms. Pontius?
I don't know if they're, included under a political subdivision definition.
This is just the Municipal Tort Claims Act. So it would just include local governments, basically.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as per Senator Limmer, I think maybe I'm not bringing this forward by the technical college. I'm just bringing it forward with my own conversation. I'd certainly be willing to work with Senator Limmer as this moves along. Should we need that? I don't even know. Maybe they're already covered, Madam Chair. So I wouldn't look forward to an amendment at all. Just let it move the way it is.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. And it may be, as Council has said, that that kind of a gift may already be covered elsewhere in law, and so we'll do that research.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Pontius.
It would have to be an amendment to 3.736, which is the State Tort Claims Act, which is in a different area of law. So.
All right. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Limmer, further comments?
I have none, Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just a question for committee members or any of the testifiers. It's my understanding that the intent here is to restrict a claim for ordinary negligence. Line 1.8 talks about any tort claim, except, and they go down to 1.10, fraud or intentional misrepresentation.
top of my head, I would say that we are also restricting a claim for, say, gross negligence. There may be some other tort claim out there that is not or is other than fraud or intentional misrepresentation. So I'm just wondering, is that what you really have in mind, or should we be talking about simply restricting claims for ordinary negligence?
Mr. Rosso.
Madam Chair, Senator, the intention is, as you've interpreted it, to restrict to any tort claims except for fraud and intentional misrepresentation. When I frankly try to describe to my clients the difference between regular negligence and gross negligence and how is that different from intentional misrepresentation, I can see their eyes glaze over. And we don't want to have those kinds of disincentives towards making the donation. So if you intentionally misrepresented the condition of the equipment, you're going to be liable if that was a misrepresentation. But we did not want to get into trying to dice and slice between negligence and gross negligence.
And what we're talking about here, Mr. Rosso, is a lawsuit between municipalities. So it would be one municipality. You wouldn't want one municipality suing for negligence against the other, but with this gift, it would only be limited then with this new law to intentional misrepresentation with the gift. Is that how it would work?
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Other Chair. Senator Newman.
This bill restricting then all tort claims by an individual against a municipality, or is it only municipality versus municipality?
Mr. Rosso.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's a tort claim by any party, whether it's a municipality or an individual. That's the reach of the statute as currently it exists with the exceptions that are in the statute. So, yes.
Well, and I would just add to that, Senator Newman, we did amend this to say that we're talking now about gifts between municipalities, not with private individuals. So it's a tort claim arising out of a gift between municipalities. Mr. Rosso?
Madam Chair, yes, it is. But if a firefighter is injured, it's going to be a firefighter or a homeowner or a business owner who may be injured. The Tort Claims Act insulates against those claims, whether it's a claim by an individual or a municipality or a governmental unit. And here we're saying that those claims can only be brought if there was intentional misrepresentation or fraud.
Senator Newman.
The explanation is exactly the way I'm reading the statute. This is barring a claim for anybody against a municipality other than fraud or intentional misrepresentation. I just want the committee members to understand that that's what we're talking about here. And that's pretty broad and sweeping claim prohibition in my estimation.
Mr. Rosso, can you comment about who would be liable? If a firefighter were injured using equipment, there could be a claim for negligence, but it wouldn't be against the municipality that donated the equipment. Is that how this would work? Can you comment on that?
Madam Chair, a firefighter would not normally have a claim against his or her own municipality. It'd be a workers' compensation situation. That the act as drafted for your consideration would restrict that individual from bringing a claim against the municipality that donated the equipment unless there was fraud or intentional misrepresentation.
Senator Newman, were you able to hear that? Would you repeat that again, Mr. Rosso? I think it's a really important point.
I'm sorry.
Please don't apologize, Senator. The act as drafted, if a firefighter was injured, a member of a department that received the donation, normally that individual would not have a claim against his or her own municipality would have a workers' compensation type of claim. This act would restrict that firefighter's ability to bring a claim against the municipality that donated the equipment unless there was fraud or intentional misrepresentation.
Well, and Mr. Razzo, another hypothetical would be a resident that might have a lawsuit against the municipality that was firefighting would not have a claim against the municipality that donated the equipment unless there were intentional misrepresentation with the donation.
Madam Chair, that's correct, and I'm struggling to imagine a situation where a homeowner would have a claim because of that situation. But if one did arise, if a piece of equipment blew up because it was defective and injured somebody, and my municipality that donated it would not be liable unless we had misrepresented intentionally the nature of that equipment.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Other questions or comments? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
To that point, Madam Chair, thank you. But that homeowner would have a case against the existing fire department, the city that they live in, because they would have purchased that equipment. You still have to be able to prove that equipment was faulty. Then they would be able to go after the donating city, but only then.
I'm going to let Mr. Rosso answer that question.
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe that's correct, that to the extent the homeowner would have a claim against their own municipal department for actions that arose out of the rescue situation and a piece of equipment that malfunctioned, this legislation does not interfere with that claim.
Are there folks here that would like to testify either for or against the bill as amended? Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson for the Association for Justice. So we have long tried to work out language on this bill, and one of our concerns is that the donation of the equipment could be to anyone, and then this blanket immunity would apply. We've worked with the proponents of the bill over several sessions, and the language that now makes it donated from a municipality to a municipality, which was added in the House Committee, satisfied a number of our concerns, and here's why. The law right now in Minnesota requires municipalities to adopt.
Mr. Carlson, does that mean you like the bill? You like the amendment?
I like the amendment. Okay. I want to tell you why, because I don't want you to think that we're wimping out here on a pretty broad protection. The Minnesota law, section 465.03 and 471.85 require municipalities to adopt a resolution whenever they are going to donate or relieve themselves of taxpayer assets. A municipality that accepts donated equipment also has to adopt a formal resolution accepting the equipment. And the testimony in the House is that through that resolution process, they are going to certainly disclose the condition of the equipment, if it is as is, how many times it's been used, if there are questions about it. And so that gives us much greater a level of comfort about the protection that's being granted, so long as it's only from a municipality to another municipality.
And Mr. Carlson, when that receiving municipality accepts the gift, then they will have counsel advising them that they should be checking the equipment, making sure it works, or making sure that they don't assume some liability or risk by accepting the equipment. So I think we should be in good shape here with this amendment.
That's we don't oppose the bill.
Thank you. Are there other folks here that would like to testify either for or against this bill as amended? Questions or comments from members? Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I do have a quick question to counsel. The term municipality, would that include townships in that definition?
Ms. Pontius. Chairman, yes, that includes all political subdivisions.
Madam Chair, I move Senator Senate File number 735 as amended to be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
Thank you. Senator Limmer moves that Senate File 735 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Senate File 735 is recommended to pass. Thank you, Senator Limmer. Yeah.
Madam Chair?
Senator Limmer.
I'd like us to consider a 15-minute recess. People can stretch their legs real quick. Is there a problem with your personal schedule, Madam Chair?
My personal schedule?
I had heard that you might have to.
I do have a meeting at 12, but I'll be returning. I'm not leaving the Capitol.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'll be here. And so you're going to reconvene and take up Senator Hand's bill?
At 12:05.
At 12:05. So we are in recess until 12:05.
I just want to make sure we get out of here before 8 tomorrow morning.
Anybody want to know what I'm doing tomorrow?
Or 5.
Sounds good, brother.
Because of this meeting, I had to call my husband and say, thank goodness I packed my suitcase last weekend.
See you.
I was supposed to have a meeting. I had to call him the other night and say, oh, guess what? I'm not coming home. So these are the shoes I want you to find for me. And don't worry about the outfit I was going to wear on the plane. I'll just go buy another one. And he goes, well, what about some things you might need? I said, whatever else I need is in my apartment.